We're going to call to order the meeting for the Senate Committee on Education. Today is March 26, 2015. And we have at least one member who has to go a little early. Is that Mr. Haas? Are you here?
No, 2:30.
2:30. Okay, we got some time. So we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 667. And with that, we'll have a short explanation of it, and Justin Martin can come on up. Justin, come on up. And you. Explanation of the bill.
Chair Roveland, members of the committee, Senate Bill 667 removes the sunset related to grants distributed to small school districts with one or more small high schools. There is no subsequent referral by prior reference. There are no amendments at this time. The bill may have a fiscal and may have a revenue impact, but statements have not been issued at this time.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Small Schools Association. My sponsors of the bill are not here, but they are very, very familiar with this bill, both Senator Cruz and Senator Gelser. So
we'll mention that about them when they get back.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. This is usually one of those bills where I'm working hard in the last few weeks of the legislature to actually get this through and to get another extension. But as you will see within the testimony I've submitted, we're actually asking for a permanent deletion of that sunset date. And to give the committee a little bit of context, originally in 2001 we passed the small high school grant fund. That was $9 million per biennium. We then went back in 2003 with House Bill 2450 and extended that. In 2007 we came back, put a sunset date of 5 years on that, came back in 2012, extended that for 1 year, and then last year in 2013 extended it for another 2 years. So, as you can see, we're pleased to be here early in front of you to have this discussion. And as I've submitted within that testimony, you will see testimonials from several of our superintendents in those small, remote areas. This grant will allow small high schools to offer a diversity of programs at the high school level. Costs per student are naturally higher with fewer students. This funding will once again disappear in June of 2015. The need to offer a variety of programs at small high schools with limited funding never goes away. This is a small amount of money, and yet it means so much to small districts struggling to provide similar opportunities to those in large districts. Finally, in my testimony, you will see a statement from Tim Sweeney, superintendent from Coquille, that I think really sums up the value of the small high school grant. He says, "I cannot begin to express how critical these little pools of money are for small schools. They are our lifeblood, and they sustain so many important educational opportunities in rural Oregon." So today, Mr. Chair, I would ask that the committee be supportive of Senate Bill 667, and we can get some certainty in our budgeting process and move forward in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do either of the other co-sponsors wish to say a few words?
Mr. Chair, I would just say, as in the other chamber, as the chair of the Education Committee, this is an issue that came up time and again. And the reason that I wanted to put this bill in is that every session we have this conversation, it goes late into the session, and it creates a lot of instability for these small schools. And it seems like extending that sunset out 4 or 5 years gives us the ability to keep looking at it. It doesn't make it permanent, but it also can provide some sense of certainty to these schools. I know that it is extra money that flows there, and we've been having some of that conversation about equity, which is always the conversation that we have in education with the state school fund formula. But if you look at what very small high schools are able to do for their students, they just don't have as many options as larger communities. And our kids in our rural schools need to have access to comprehensive choices. This still doesn't get them all the way there, but at least it will help make sure that they can get the basics.
Yeah, Ms. Chair, you know Mr. Sweeney.
I do.
He's good. They do a good job there, and without these funds, it becomes incredibly difficult for them to give the quality education they're giving. And I guess our hope is that when this gets sent to the next committee, that the chair of the revenue committee will look favorably upon this proposal. whoever that might be.
With that, I would ask Senator Hass if he has a comment.
I echo the sentiments of my two colleagues here. This is, there are some unique challenges with these very little skills, some of whom have a handful of kids in the entire district. Likewise, there are some challenges that these giant school districts it's hard for some of the people in both universes to understand what the others are up against sometimes, I think. I guess I just have one question, Justin. This committee has been discussing some of the programs that pull money out of the K through 12 system to use for college. And do any of these schools that you're representing do that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hass, I don't have that information available right now. I would imagine with some of our challenges being so rural that maybe we don't take advantage of or have the opportunity to take advantage of some of those college programs that are offered. I think obviously there's value in those programs. We would love to see that opportunity for every student throughout Oregon. And on the flip side, we always have concerns, much like the rest of the educational community, on anything that may deplete funds from K-12. So I can certainly work to get you that information. Spring break this week, I will get you that, and we'll go from there.
Thank you.
Okay. If I could, partial response to Senator Hass's question, because I have several of these small schools in my area. They suffer from some technological disadvantages, and some of them also suffer from geographical disadvantages, that they're a long ways from, that they can't actually attend just because you're driving an hour, hour and a half to get to a community college, for example. So it is one of the challenges.
Any other questions? You know, we will look at this fairly quickly. Currently, there are no subsequent referrals anywhere, and currently there, so we'll have to look at that as we get the paperwork in to make a decision. Does it say revenue?
Yeah.
I was looking at it, I didn't think it did, so we'll check on that too.
Well, according to this this sheet, it does. So.
Okay. So one or the other. Which bill are you on?
Which bill are you on?
I'm on Senate Bill
667.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it does. Okay. No prior.
Oh, but see, it looks like it's under 667, but that's actually 2896. It's just the formatting there.
That's where it is. That's, okay. Thank you. Good observing. But we do have to wait, and I anticipate it will have a fiscal that's larger than, around $5 million. That will probably move it to another committee. So I do appreciate that. Any other questions? Seeing none, we thank you very much, Justin. Anybody else that would like to testify who didn't sign up? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 667. And we're going to do some work sessions now. So with that,
Chair Rublin, I move the dash three amendments as presented on Senate Bill 439.
So Senator Hass moves to adopt the dash three amendments as presented. Is there any
need to go into work session?
Oh, that's right. Thank you. We were moving fast. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 439. And with that, Senator Hass.
Senator Roblin, this is the outdoor education bill.
Correct.
That we're going to send to Ways and Means?
Correct.
Okay, and it's got a dash three amendment.
Correct.
And I don't know if Gretchen or somebody wants to update us.
Gretchen, can I update the dash three amendments?
Certainly, Senator.
He's moving fast.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
He's at Chip Kelly office.
That's right. Exactly.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, the dash three amendments add some specificity to the program, including allowing for cultural specificity and local context for the programs. They also allow schools who are not able to provide a six-day residential program continuously to have some alternatives. So they could, for example, have a program over one day and not have the students camp there that night if they weren't able to do so.
Okay. And again, this one is on its way because we did get its fiscal, it's up there, and we will be sending it to Ways and Means. And whether the Ways and Means, we're looking at making a decision with respect, do we as a committee believe it's the right thing to do? They will decide whether it in the scope of things can be afforded.
Right. Okay, so we're on the
amendment.
We need a vote.
Yep. So I'll better take the motion because we were not in work session.
I move to adopt the -3 amendments on Senate Bill 439.
Senator Hess moves to adopt the -3 amendments as presented. Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition to the -3 amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 439 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Hess moves Senate Bill 439 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Committee of Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Yes. Senator Canope.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. As with other bills this week, I've been pretty clear about my concern about K-12 and the base budget that we have. Love outdoor schools, love the opportunity, concerned about the potential funding sources for those. So this is a little bit early for me to want to refer this down to Ways and Means for until we get that base budget, I think, up to where it needs to be. Because I really think this needs to be part of the formula for all schools, but I'd rather see that a lot closer to $8 billion than it is to 7.255. So I'm going to be a no today. Could be a yes later on if we can figure out the funding sources for the base budget.
Representative Baird, Senator Bairdsager, sorry about that. You've never been a representative, so only Senator Bairdsager.
No excuse.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. You know, outdoor school is something that I do believe. I think it's good policy, but I'll have to agree with Senator Canope. You know, I had my staff trying to chase down how much this is going to cost, and I don't know, we're hearing numbers like $40 million, $44 million or something. I don't know, but I couldn't.
What's the revenue?
No, the fiscal just says it's going to be determined downstairs.
I know, that's right.
You know, until we got a handle, I just carve outs outside the formula, especially big numbers like that, if they're true. I don't know if they're true. So and until I know what it's going to cost and where the money's going to come, whether it's in the formula outside, I just couldn't move it on.
Okay. Oh, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. To echo my colleagues, I think this is a great program. I truly do. But as I've told you, Mr. Chair, I don't think we've done an adequate job of funding the core mission of K-12. And I'm reluctant to throw bells and whistles into that system until we've made sure that the core funding has been taken care of. And at this point, I don't think it has. So.
Thank you. Other comments? Oh, one. We heard from the people in one of my counties, Tillamook, where school district, where they've made this a priority and they continue to have fund the school, and they have directly related it to their ability to get kids to graduate and to move on. And we had some testimony to the same point. And so I understand we have some issues to work out, and I think Ways and Means can maybe do that. Maybe we find some other places. But the reality is, from the standpoint of the policy, which is what Ways and Means asks us to talk about, they'll figure out resources. I think it's a good bill. I think we should move it forward. So that's why we're having the hearing today. So I appreciate the comments. And with that.
Well, Mr. Chair, just one more comment if I could.
Sure.
I'm on the record as thinking this is a great program. That's not the issue. But we are sending it to Ways and Means. And I think having a mixed vote going down to that, I mean, if we are sending it without recommendation, that might have been a different thing. But we're sending it with recommendation. So I think a mixed vote helps send a signal that we're trying to give to that subcommittee I believe you sit on.
I do.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Senator Bairdsager?
No.
Aye.
Aye. Senator Gelser?
Aye.
Senator Hass?
Aye.
Senator Cruz?
No.
Vice Chair Canope?
No.
Aye. So we will, the motion passed, and we will send it on down, and I thank all of you for your participation, and we will close the work session on Senate Bill 439. And we will open a work session on Senate Bill 553. And this is a bill we heard a while back. We have some Dash 3 amendments. Senator Gelser, would you like to explain the Dash 3s, or do I want my...
You know, I think the stakeholders might do a better job explaining the Dash 3s.
Okay, that'd be great.
And how they arrived at them. Just always looking for an excuse to bring Morgan up.
Okay, that's right. Talking about the schools.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Mark McKechnie, Youth Rights and Justice. We were happy to work out these amendments with the school district and staff stakeholders, and I think the process went fairly well, partly because of all the work that we did in 2013 on House Bill 2192. We were able to follow up and come up with some more specific parameters around suspension in elementary grades. Really, the policy intent remains the same in the amendments, but we came up with some more specific language on some issues that fits the day-to-day reality in school districts. And also, I would say, gives administrators slightly more discretion in some circumstances than the original language did in circumstances where there might be a direct threat to students or staff, and the ability of administrators to intervene rather than hopefully would never have to wait until something actually happened to intervene. So specifically, the language was changed to get away from an age cutoff. The original bill referred to students under 12. Now it refers to students in grade 5 and under, partly on the chance that 11 and 12-year-olds might be in the same class, and you would have different standards apply to students in the same class. We wanted to avoid that eventuality. Tightened up the language in terms of students who cause serious harm to students or school employees through non-accidental conduct. And then also giving administrators the ability to determine and impose either suspension or expulsion if they find that a student's behavior poses a direct threat to students or staff, their health or safety. And then also still any expulsion, obviously, that's required by federal law would still be required. We also moved away from the team concept that was in the original bill, where in the case of a suspension, the school would convene a team to help get the student back in school. I think we still have the same goal, but we're sort of requiring that activities be made without prescribing that a team specifically be convened. So the school will have an obligation to look at the behavior, figure out how to prevent that behavior, and move the student back into an academic environment as soon as possible, obviously within 10 days maximum of a suspension. And then also just simply clarified the language, I think, to recognize the reality of how school days vary among districts, the fact that some districts have four-day school weeks, others have five, their various half days and in-service days, and simply tying the measurement of a half day or a full day exclusion to the reality of what school days look like across the state.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Morgan Allen on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, and just agree with the comments. This is the second session I've had an opportunity to work with Mr. McKechnie on these student discipline policies. I think we took some important first steps last session, and I think this is actually a pretty big step in getting the outcomes we want, which is those for those young kids not disrupting their academic learning and keeping them in school as much as possible. And I appreciate that we were able to negotiate some reasonable areas where when there's health or safety issues that an administrator feels imminent or a teacher reports that that's imminent, that they still have some discretion to take some action on behalf of those kids. And I think we cleared up some things around what is a half-day suspension versus a full day, and this is good public policy, and we're glad to support it. Thank you.
Any questions by any of our group? No. Okay. Thank you both for coming up. So with that, I would entertain a motion to accept the Dash 3 amendments. Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments as presented.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments as presented. Is there any discussion?
I just want to thank the work group. Just as last year with a bill that looked kind of hard at the beginning, I really appreciate the way everybody came together to find a way to make things better for kids. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none. Any opposition to the amendment? Seeing none. It is adopted. Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 553 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 553 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none. So moved. And would you like to carry this?
Yes, please.
Okay. So we'll have Senator Gelser be the carrier of this bill. And with that, we will close our work session on Senate Bill 553, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 554. And it appears we have no amendments. Amazing. Again, we'll have a short explanation by our administrator and this bill, what we did, and then I will entertain a motion.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 554 directs the Department of Education to assist school districts with achieving specified goals related to school discipline. There is no subsequent referral by prior reference. There are no amendments at this time. An indeterminate fiscal statement was issued and with a recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
That be referred, yeah.
And there's no revenue impact at this time.
Okay. Very good. With that, Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 554 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 554 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the committee, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by, because we decided that, okay, not by prayer. Is there any discussion to that? Seeing none, is there any opposition to this going on to Ways and Means? Seeing none, it is moved and we don't need a person to carry that bill. So with that, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 554. We're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 556. And we'll have a short explanation. And we don't have any amendments on this bill either. Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 556 prohibits the use of expulsion to address truancy. There's no subsequent referral by prior reference. There are no amendments at this time. And the bill has been issued a minimal fiscal impact statement, and there is no revenue impact.
It can. So with that, I would entertain a motion. Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, completing Senator Sarah Gelser Day at the Capitol here, I move Senate Bill 556 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 556 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes. Senator Cruz.
I want to thank Senator Gelser for the work on this. This is a good chunk of work that she's done here, so thank you.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, it is moved. And this bill does need a carrier.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank
well,
you.
Unless there's anybody else that wants to fight for it.
Oh,
no,
I'm not fighting for it.
I'm pretty scary.
So we'll have Senator Gelser carry that bill as well, and we will close our work session on Senate Bill 556. And then we're going to go to a public hearing. We're going to change it from the Sarah Gelser Day, Senator Knope and Roblin Day, but we'll move it to Knope. I'll stay here. You're going to go down, right?
All right. I'll do it.
So we're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 896. Thank you. That's my dyslexia. I got to remember that. I have to look at it carefully. So we're going to open a public hearing, and we can also have Mark Lindman come on up. And I think there's room if you have a board member or anybody that is with you, they can come up as well. Which, however you want to do that.
Yeah, he wasn't able to make it. It's
okay.
A long story.
Mr. Chair, can we?
With his daughter.
We have time.
Yeah, that's right. There you go. We have. We have moving pretty quick.
Mr. Chair, would it be efficient to open public hearings on all of them? So
we could do that. That would probably be helpful since it's the same people going back and forth. Yeah. So we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 897 as well and 898.
Sequential. How did you get that?
I know. It's always amazing sometimes. So with that.
Yes, thank you, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. Senator Tim Canope, State Senator from Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Sun River, and Tumalo. And really these packages of bills that I've sponsored with the chair are trying to address some pretty specific things within the K through 12 community. And Oregon should provide every child with access to an educational environment where they can belong and can succeed. When students and parents are connected with targeted resources, every student can grow and achieve. As a hub of education and social life in many communities, schools have a powerful opportunity to serve and strengthen families as well as students. However, lack of resources and a lack of flexibility hamper schools and ultimately students. All students and their parents should be able to, I think, find from an early age the environment where they can thrive, no matter their language, ethnicity, or their learning style or ability. Status quo schools are often good for kids who fit the box, but none of us really want to send our kids to status quo schools. But not, you know, we want them to be more effective and out of the box in terms of being learners. The needs of students should be preeminent, I think, in deciding the force in education policy that we're going to pursue. And so Senate Bill 896, I think we should increase special education funding rates to better reflect the number of students with learning disabilities. And I think that was much needed for some period of time. And as I talk to people throughout my districts, they're very concerned about their ability. I think even with special ed classes and kids that take those classes, that those class sizes are also rather large as we compare those to other states. Many of the disability programs are more costly and need to be funded to ensure that students receive that same education level as everyone. And with that, I can stop and let Mark talk, or you, I can keep going on the other two bills.
Go ahead, Mark.
Just to add, for 896, basically this kind of came out of, at the time that this stuff was kind of conceived, it was just a bunch of superintendents talking about the massive rise in special ed need, i.e. autism and other things that, as you know, are prevalent and rampant. We also had the issue of inter-district transfer and special ed kids not being allowed to transfer, but other kids being allowed to transfer, and it was seen in superintendent ranks as a potential discrimination issue. And one of the ways to address that is to do some research, and so I worked with ODE and Michael Elliott and Michael Wiltfong, and I was really shocked. 87% of districts are at or above the 11% funding level in special ed. That's a huge percentage of school districts, almost 9 out of 10. The other issue is when you looked at the average, what would the new average be when this 11% was set up? It was 11% was set up and established to disincentivize over-identification. And 13% pretty much puts us right back in the same target. It just adjusts it for the number of new challenges that we face in special education. So it preserves the disincentive. But it also, for districts that 50 or a little over 60% of those districts are above 13%, like in my district, we're at 24% special ed identified IEP. That's huge in a small district. The cost is astronomical. And so I'm taking a lot of money that I have to divert from the classroom to serve those kids because I'm inadequately funded in special ed. And it's those kinds of issues that lead to those other things like inter-district transfer, et cetera, et cetera. So the solution is by bumping it up from 11 to 13%, if you're in Portland Public, for example, that 2% is $1 million+ that school district can then put back into the regular school program. So not only does it support special ed kids in general by providing a more adequate funding, but it also has the added benefit of freeing up funds to go back into the regular program, which is obviously the push-pull with this. It adds about 5,500 new weights And it has a price tag of $18 million to double the high-cost disability and about $38 million to fund those 5,500 weights set at 2014-15 levels.
Questions? Yes. Representative Gelser.
Thank you. I had a couple questions. Is that
please.
Okay, the first is more an information point. The increase in high-cost disability, I believe that that is also on its way over. I think it passed
right.
the House floor.
Yes, it did.
The other day, Representative McClain. And then the other thing I wondered if you could clarify, you had mentioned that some students aren't allowed to participate in inter-district transfer because of IEPs, but we passed legislation last session, House Bill 2787, that eliminated the ability for any district to discriminate. They have to identify the number of slots that they have available, and on the applications now you can only ask the name and grade level. And a district may not deny releasing a student or accepting a student because of disability or color or what town they live in. And that's a new thing. We passed that last session, but I just wanted to clarify that for the record.
No, and I'll be clear as well. It was before that was passed that this stuff was kind of conceived and discussed, but the problem still exists. It's still an issue, so districts are saying no to inter-district transfer, period.
Completely. That's
okay.
True.
And just I just wanted to clarify that the law is pretty clear that you cannot do that.
If you're going to be
and
part
for the
of
record,
the
I supported that. But
yes, Senator Haas.
Thank you. I'm not sure where to start on these three bills, but first, is the goal here on special ed formula changes to offset changes with ELL? So that within the formula, it doesn't, they just kind of neutralize each other?
Well, this would be separate of ELL. Basically, it takes three groups of students.
Well, 897.
Or 897 is the ELL bill. Right. This is 896. But
right.
on the ELL one, what EL, are we talking about 897 now? Do you want me to?
Well, I see two bills that change the formula.
Yeah.
896 and 897. And I'm just wondering if you were trying to offset one with the other.
Not necessarily, because you can co-mingle the popular IEP kids who are also ELL. But in general, the ELL issue is another sensitive issue because I attended some committee meetings last spring, and tons of different ELL parents and kids and families from all over the world, every language you can imagine, 80-plus languages. I talked to all kinds of people. And really what I was hearing in terms of what we need is districts, they're in a quandary because they're underfunded in ESL, and they all have very different challenges. So, for example, when I talk to folks in Portland Public, they have 83 different languages they have to teach.
In Beaverton, it's over 90.
Yeah, in Beaverton's over 90. And in Forest Grove, it's roughly one, Spanish. You can't really compare them. So 897 is designed to create some nimbleness and flexibility to allow local districts to have a pocket of funds that they can apply to their unique challenges. And it would greatly level the playing field. It also reaches 100% of ELL students, so it sets minimums for all ELL districts. So a district, let's say, in Malheur County that has a small ELL population, maybe 17 kids, they would get a minimum of $35,000 in addition to their regular ELL fund and to do those things. And predominantly what the research shows is that exiting students, immersing them, and monitoring and supporting them while they're in the regular population is one of the more successful processes for getting those kids to master a second language. And this would allow districts those funds to do that.
Follow up,
yes.
Well, then I understand that these are, you know, people who have worked with the formula much understand that one change like this is a kind of a seismic shaking of the whole system. Two is more, not that we can't do it or that we shouldn't, but I was just wondering, in the past when there's been successful runs at changing the formula, they kind of offset each other. So I guess that's just a comment.
Can I address that real quick?
Yes.
And I'll take a page out of Senator Knope's book. The only way to do that without creating exactly what you're saying is to fund these bills. So you fund them in addition to, so we're not having this perturbation of funding because the main program is whole. So these would be in addition to.
No. Well, when you talk about changing the weights for ELL.
Well, it wouldn't change the weights. What it does is it leaves regular ELL this creates a new funding line, a new source of funding, and it would be tracked on a separate funding page, like a 200 page.
Well, then that's a segue into the next question. What would be this new source of funding?
Well, that's a little bit of the sticky wicket, as I like to say that.
It's not
when you look
at the
bit. It's a 50 million.
The sticky wicket.
Well, it is. It can be, but the cause is just, and the price tag is small. This is very efficient use of money, much more efficient than regular dollars rolling through various districts and programs, because this money is targeted. It goes on a separate distribution to districts, and it's tracked separately and specifically used, so it goes right to the classroom.
Maybe we could let Senator Knope take a crack at that.
All right.
What would be the source of funding for this?
Well, I mean, my first response would be that there was an election that was taken, and I was elected the spokesman for the bills, and the good chair was elected the pretty face and the brains. So probably we should let him talk about that stuff. But my understanding is there are many potential options, and I'm not saying that they aren't difficult, but, I mean, for instance, there is within Ways and Means, I believe, a conversion that's going to happen with about $123 to $130 million. I think that was suggested in the last budget for raises for state employees, and those could be redirected specifically toward K through 12. Obviously, we're having a discussion in the building going on about gain share and trying to corral some of that money, or at least that's what I would do, is try to corral some of that money going toward K through 12. And then I think there are a myriad of other places, but as I've indicated before, I think the focus of this legislature needs to be on job creation, because that's ultimately the only sustainable path for funding K through 12 and the other programs that we all care about and the citizens of Oregon care about. And I really don't believe we spend enough time trying to help small businesses, which is the backbone of our economy, try to put them in a position to be more successful. And unfortunately, quite frankly, it seems like this legislature is taking some swipes at them, and I think is probably going to hurt our ability to fund K through 12. And so I would prefer that we started there. I prefer we had started three bienniums ago on that, because I think there would be more revenue there today. But ultimately, I do think that we need to work in ways and means to try to identify, the very difficult choices that are going to get us to that $7.5 to $8 billion budget number that I think these things get possible with, and that that your bill gets possible with in terms of funding for these programs in education that I think change the game for a lot of our students.
Well, I thank you for identifying those two sources: gain share as a possibility, raises for our state employees as a possibility. Those are at least answers. As far as job creation, the unemployment rate is 5.8%, much lower, about half of what it was three biennials ago.
Yep.
So we could always do better, and I think we've done a good job, even this session with the Central Assessment Bill and others, but that's not a funding source.
Well, ultimately, Mr. Chair and Senator, I like to say Hass. Some people say it different, but I really like to say it right. I really think it is a funding source, because ultimately that revenue is going to come back to us and to the state. And I mean, you and the great work that you did on Senate Bill 611, there's billions of dollars worth of potential investment that's there embodied in 611 with the amount of infrastructure that's going to be created. And you're creating just in Central Oregon, you just take Central Oregon, there were literally hundreds of construction jobs every day for 4 years. And ultimately, that's millions of dollars to the state in revenue from those jobs. And those jobs wouldn't have been there if that infrastructure for those data centers wasn't created. And there's billions more that are coming because of that. And that's what I'm talking about, is trying to narrow our focus on things that will truly make a difference year after year for sustainable funding for K through 12, because just adding more taxes on top of people who are already paying them, it's a downward spiral. Because ultimately, you run out of revenue because people change and move, especially the type of people that have proposed to be taxed in this. And I know keeping the kicker has been bandied about in this building, but that's not a sustainable revenue source either. And so you're just digging your hole deeper if you can't help identify that source. And I think it does mean that we have to take a really sharp pencil to a lot of the state budgets. And I recognize that that's a very uncomfortable thing to do. And I can tell you that when I was the House Majority Leader in 2003, when we gave the equivalent in today's dollars of over $8 billion to K-12, that we got absolutely pilloried for the choices that we made, but we still made them because education was, we thought, was critically important to fund. And I'm not going to point at anybody in particular, but I do know that I had my leg chewed off by more than one person in the Democratic caucus for not funding education at a high enough level, and that was when we were at, I say, the equivalent of $8 billion today. So I really think we need to, you know, get focused and do better on that so we can fund things like this and things like, you know, your bill, and because I know everybody on this committee has got a passion about something as it relates to education, including outdoor schools.
But you do acknowledge that that's the long-term solution, not the short-term solution, because it won't raise any money for this budget. It'll raise money for the future budget.
It could. Chair Roblin, I'm not suggesting it's hundreds of millions of dollars, but I am suggesting that decisions we make today can happen. I wouldn't be surprised to see more work in terms of construction of data centers get created in this biennium. I mean, that's an ongoing project, obviously. That's years in the making to fully complete. But I would not doubt that there won't be money available from the good work that the Chair of Revenue and Finance did on that bill.
We might as well, further questions right now? We might as well finish up the conversations of the other two bills, and I think it'll make it easier for some people to understand the questions that Senator Hass just raised, because these are different ways of doing it. The first one that we just finished was basically around changing that minimum number of people who are listed as special education, because the number of kids overall in the state has increased, and it does affect the formula, because in that particular case, it adds some more people on a regular basis. Most of those people are already being added, however, because there is the opportunity to file for more than the 11%. But you have to go through a process. It does a whole lot of work that I'm not saying we need to do. I'm just saying it wouldn't add a lot to the formula, because there's a lot of those people that are already being added in.
Yeah, well, and funding the 2%, to me, it's a worthy investment. And the best way to do it is to, I mean, you know, I don't know if we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. The price tag for 896 is about, you know, 47 million, something like that. And all of 18 million of it's already put into the co-chair's budget. So to me, as a parent of a special needs child, where I'm constantly dealing with these issues at the school district my daughter attends, we can do better. And it's a guaranteed winner, and it has bipartisan support. So 896 would be good. Senator Hass, I don't envy your situation. I felt like I walked into the arm wrestling match between the Hatfields and McCoys.
One second. Yeah. Senator Gelser, I'll get this.
Just call me the girl.
Yeah.
I'm having a little bit of a hard time wrapping my head around the bill, because since it doesn't propose to increase the size of the pot to pay for the extra weights, the weights are already going to the districts anyway, because each of the students is pulling down a regular weight and a second weight. So the value of both of those weights will come down at 13%. And since most districts are close to the same point in terms of the number of kids in special ed they have over the 11%, I'm having a hard time understanding
how that is in a wash. Senator Gelser. This bill does propose to create additional funding so that it doesn't water down the weights. So this would grow the piece of the pie. This would be an additional revenue above the 722 or 7255, I think is the latest number. And that's the only...
Say that, because in the bill, it just changes the percentage from 11% to 13%. There's no allocation in the bill, except for the high-cost disability fund, but that doesn't run through the state school fund.
Well, again, I don't write the bills, but I wouldn't recommend anything other than funding it, because it's not right to take away from the main program. But this is a need that does exist. All of these bills would come with some kind of price tag. And so I've been pretty consistent at saying you got to fund these bills in addition to. I think, Senator Roblin, you know that as well. And this is it's a lot of money in the sense, but it's a doable thing, even in this session. It comes down to those tough choices. But this is something that really does need to be addressed, and I applaud those who doubled the high-cost disability. That was another thing that needed to be addressed.
May I ask one more question?
Sure.
So there was another statement that you had made about a benefit of the bill would be that the special ed fund, that second weight, goes directly to the classroom. Is there a way that those funds are handled differently when they come into a district than the other funds that I'm not aware of? Because I believe those funds can also be used for administration and supplies and other things that are critical to serving students.
Yeah, I didn't
understood that it moved differently than the first weight.
If I understood what you said, I don't want to conflate. 896, 897, it creates a separate funding page. But 896 would be through the regular formula. The numbers would
You're
go
right.
from 11 to 13%.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And one more. Senator Hass.
Mr. Superintendent, you feel so strongly about these bills, and since Senator Canova brought it up, would you encourage the legislature to suspend the kicker this session to fund this?
Well, I can speak for myself. I say send it to a vote of the people, but that's just me.
We have a bill in the committee. We have a bill in the committee for that.
Yeah, but nobody's listening to me. So anyway, I'm all for that. I know there's issues around that, and it is tax money, and I understand those sensitivities. But I trust the people and their judgment. And if you could fund all these bills and have a little left over if you did that. And to me, it's just a huge win. Everybody wins. But I hope I didn't overspeak there.
You mentioned it as your opinion. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
What this is about.
The chair expects us to speak freely in this committee.
Okay. I do.
We haven't got to my favorite bill yet.
I know. So Senator Canope, you have not spoken yet on the second bill. So
yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
If there's anything else you want to say about that one, we'll go all through the rest of the bills, and then we can take them as a whole, because I think they are kind of that way, too. Yes.
Yep. So on Senate Bill 897, I think we should just change the funding of English language learning programs to reward effective and efficient ELL instruction. I think fund research-based programs supported by targeted ELL funds with early graduation bonus funding when successful students exit the program. And the thing I've heard from districts is that some kids are there their entire career in English as a second, or in the ELL program. And I think the studies have said that oral proficiency takes about 3 to 5 years to develop, and then essentially completion or English proficiency can take 4 to 7 years. And obviously it depends on when you enter the program, but if you're entering in kindergarten, it doesn't seem like you should spend the entire school career in that, or that should be rewarded in terms of a school district, because either you're either getting the job done or you're not as it relates to this. And so I think this is just more of an efficiency model and a rewards model than anything else in terms of trying to tackle this issue that I think a lot of districts have identified has become an issue.
And you want to say a few more on this one, or I think
no,
you
just well
it.
Said. It does set a $35,000 minimum for small districts, and that would allow districts in small and rural places to pool money in support of ELL kids, which would be a big sea change. It would change a whole host of things in terms of the support that those kids get.
Okay, we'll go on to the third.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So out of the $8 billion K-12 budget in Senate Bill 898. I think we should create new funding out of the state school fund for locally targeted strategic investment based on individual districts' needs. The new funds could be spent on innovation or support programs such as family coordinators or counselors, behavioral specialists, career planning, life skills, education intervention programs, obviously issues relating to dyslexia and the like. And every district is different. I mean, I have two districts that I represent in Senate District 27, and they're each a little bit different. And even the schools within those districts vary greatly as to what their needs are. And so this is just an opportunity, not unlike, you know, some of the things that the Chalkboard Project wants to do. And this is really designed to kind of be a very targeted effort as it relates to our districts and their needs versus just an overall, you know, here you go, here's another weight for that. So that's really the goal out of Senate Bill 898, and obviously we need to, I think, fund education at a higher level than we're currently, at least currently came out of Ways and Means in order to do some of these things. But I am hopeful that we will get there by the end of session.
So just real quick to add to that, this has a $150 million price tag, and I handed out, I think you guys got a spreadsheet here. And if you look at the second to the last column on the right, that would be the amount that districts, I got them listed by county, would receive at 2014-2015 student averages, which is about $6,823 per student. You know, that changes. It goes up and down. But just as a ballpark figure. And so to show you what a sea change this would be, if it, this whole concept was built off the original strategic initiative funding. I think the OEA and Governor Kitzhaber a while back, years ago, funded that. And it was really popular. And the problem was the funding wasn't stable. And a lot of that money didn't really get to the kind of outcomes that we wanted to get, because if I'm a district and I've got to fund a new program and I know I've only got 2 years of funding and no guarantee of continuous stability, I'm going to hire people that I can let go rather than use that money for long-term innovation. So this would be, there's really three ways to do it. You could put it as a funding line in the SSF, which might, as Senator Haas said, create some perturbation. You could fund it the way ESDs are, where you add the additional money into the total pot, and then you carve it out, and it rolls through ODE and goes directly to districts in a separate payment. The funding would be tracked separately, again, on a 200-page. And each individual district, based on their needs. So, for example, go back to the compact and 40-40-20 and some of these other things that the legislature has asked us to work on. District A may have a freshman on track issue, and they could use some of these funds to do innovative things to address that. District B may not have a freshman on track issue. They may have a real CTE need to reinvest in CTE, and they could use these funds for that. One of the latest deals that hit the paper was the fifth-year program. I know that I've had lots of dialogue about that. The nice thing about this is it creates a menu of innovations. So if you look at the risks of you know, if everybody does five-year programs and kids stay in and it waters down the K-12, those are legitimate concerns. This limits those things but allows those innovations that are working for those individual districts to continue. So there's a tremendous number of wins with this kind of concept. This funding, because it would be attached to the SSF, would be ongoing. So if the pie shrank, these funds would still be available. If the pie grew, these funds would still be available. That's stability in funding, and that's the game changer. And if you want to spur innovation and incentivize individual school districts to do creative and innovative things, these funds are critical. So I can only speak for ALC. My amount would be $63,000, basically $64,000. And based on our data, we have 81% free and reduced lunch, and we have about a third of our elementary kids who go away over the summer and lose a lot of skills. We call it summer recidivism, where they lose knowledge. And the data is so clear. We work hard all year. We get them just up to grade level, and then summer hits, and we have to start over again. And as a result, they're not on track to read by third grade, et cetera, et cetera. The solution is simple, and we're going to do a summer institute for 4 weeks on reading and math. We'll be able to fund that with this program, and I can do it for a multiple or at least 3 to 5 years, so I could track the data and see if that program is effective at reducing that summer recidivism for that cohort of students. That's one simple example of a sea change that legislation like this can generate for districts all over the state.
Senator Cruz.
I just wonder, why don't we just bite the bullet and go to year-round school? Well, that would solve the problem, wouldn't it?
Well,
a lot of the problems.
I don't know if that would solve the problem per se. I'm not a sociologist, but I will say, because this would be a less controversial way. I'm just trying to help, Senator Cruz.
Okay.
Okay. This would be in a very popular way. And this heals over a whole lot of wounds. CTE funding, which is in jeopardy, five-year programs, so on and so forth. Just add those innovations to the list.
Questions? Yes.
Thank you, Chair Roblin. Couldn't we get the same result by just making the pie bigger and then let the school districts on a case-by-case basis decide what their needs are depending on, you know, their...
I'm really glad you asked that question. The most popular option is to do this as a carve-out because, I mean, there was an article just recently for the previous governor email, I hope I'm not doing a faux pas, talking about the belief in the general population, also here in the government, about the war between a continuing crisis in education, where we add a little money, but it goes into wages and COLAs and PERS and et cetera. I don't think that's a secret, is it? I think we had a PERS crisis just not too long ago. That's a perception, okay? And these funds, They're not accessible for bargaining if they're carved out. They go straight to the classroom into innovation. And that's a huge win. It's very popular with superintendents when they think about what they could do with these funds. And as you know, if you look at the list, if you get a district like Ben Lapine, you know, we're talking $4 million. What could they do with $4 million in Ben? You know anybody there, Senator Cano?
I do.
I mean, and this goes to all the districts in Oregon. Every district gets a minimum of $50,000. To me, it's worth moving forward to. And you don't have this this board or something that picks winners and losers, because it empowers school boards to direct those funds to address real problems in their districts. So this would be a better use of those monies, because we wouldn't be fighting over them, and they wouldn't be going to COLAs per se.
Separate ADM.
I hope that answered your question.
Formula. The number of ADMs we have. It's just dispersed.
Would it be a straight ADM or ADMW? It'd just be straight ADM, wouldn't it?
I think it's ADMW.
It's based on an ADMW.
So if you have some of those other deals, you're going to get a little extra money because it's using the same weighted formula.
But see, the problem with grants in the past from OD and when they give them out to everybody on an ADMW basis, and I'll see, you know, we get a whole $4,700. So what am I supposed to do with that?
Well, Mr. Chair, a long, long time ago, I think in 1999, a representative by the name of Ken Strobeck and I had a bill in to eliminate the weights in the system. And at that point in time, the only two school districts that lost were Woodburn and Portland, and everybody else gained. So I'm wondering if we're going to do this enhanced model, that we look more at a straight ADM without the weights.
You guys could do that.
We can have a conversation. I guess my comment is that a group of superintendents, I think there were three of you that came to my office mm-hmm. Before the beginning of the session to talk about these bills, one of whom was in my district. And I feel very strongly that when constituents and others come up with ideas, we really need to have the conversation. There are parts of these I really like. Figuring out the funding is a really big and important issue to me, and I think you'll notice that each and every one of these has a subsequent referral to revenue, because that is it doesn't work without revenue. I mean, this and figuring out what that is. So, but the ideas I felt were important to talk about. I do appreciate what OEA and the governor did previously with respect to the innovation type fund, and I know the ones patterned after that. This one actually has the funding over time to go with it. I have felt that could be a good answer to a lot of our initiatives that we put out there, mm-hmm. Because as you said, some people have already solved that ninth grade problem. Mm-hmm. Others haven't solved the the early reading problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, so if you give districts with a set group of initiatives that you want to work on and say, here's your money, you figure out the initiative you want to pick, mm-hmm. And then focus the money, and then send back to us what happened and what yeah. did, I think it helps inform everybody. So mm-hmm. I like some of those conversations, and I like having it so it's not just 2 years and gone. So as they talked to me about it, I felt we needed to have the conversation. I was appreciative that Senator Canote brought it over to look at, and that the superintendents explained to me what they were doing, because I think we can have those conversations. I do believe that the separate money stream is helpful. We have had a lot of conversations about how to get money directly to the classroom. But I appreciate you saying the people could make a good decision on the, because I kind of agree. We have a bill up here, actually, that would send it to the people to have that conversation mm-hmm. That Senator Monroe brought forward. So I think we continue to need to have kind of the conversations. Though we've had conversations, and I have with other people, that is a one-time only money, and so how do we make sure that it is sustainable? So that is an obvious opportunity to have a conversation. But we need a bigger pie, and I think that goes back to what Senator Bertschuker said earlier. At the same time, if we're really going to support innovation, and there's a whole lot of these things we've talked about, I think we're going to have to figure out how to get there. So I appreciate bringing the bills to us. We'll see where we go from here. Any other questions here? Yes.
Mr. Chair, just one last, point. Strategic point to increase attendance at my town halls this weekend. I would also be for treatment of our forests, including the Elliott Forest. I know that's a little close to home for you, but I think there's the potential for tens of millions of dollars if we would, do the necessary work in our forests, both on the east and west side. And I don't think as a natural resource state we can get away from that. And so undoubtedly I've doubled the attendance now of my town halls this weekend. So thank you for that opportunity.
And I would say and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, like some of the other issues with respect to growing the pie by having jobs, it's out there. With the Elliott in particular, we raise the money in the Elliott, it goes into the other fund, and then we get the interest out. So it doesn't grow it very quickly, but I'm open to cutting some more trees on the Elliott. So,
Mr. Chair, my question, Senator Canope, is, so you're thinking that we ought to do something really strange, like comply with the provisions of the Oregon Forest Practices Act? Is that basically what and Mr. Chair, it may not have instant revenue into the Common School Fund, but it's not taking it away either.
Well, I agree. I'm all for it.
When it's costing us $3 million annually just to operate a forest, that we're doing something terribly wrong.
Yep. So thank you both.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that didn't sign up that would like to speak to any one of these three bills? If they would, the offer is out there now for you to speak. I know no one is rushing to the podium. So with that, I thank everyone. We're going to close the public hearings on Senate Bill 896, 897 closed, and 898 closed. And that's pretty much our business. I'm impressed.
Especially the pressure starts.
So any other questions with respect to any of these bills? Seeing none, our education committee is adjourned. Thank you all.